This is episode 382 of Jumble Think.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to JumbleThink, where we interview dreamers, makers, innovators, and influencers all about their journey of turning dreams and ideas into reality. Along the way, we're going to share some tips on how you can turn your own dreams and ideas into reality too. Our guest on today's show is Todd Eckler. More about Todd in a moment. Whether you're a new listener or a longtime fan, if you've never subscribed to JumbleThink, now's the time to do it. Head on over to wherever you like to listen to podcasts, search for JumbleThink, and click that magical subscribe button. To make it even easier, if you head on over to jumblethink.com, you'll find links to places like YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Pandora, Spotify, and more. So make sure to never miss an episode of JumbleThink by heading on over to wherever you want to listen to the show and clicking subscribe. Now let's join today's conversation. Hey there, friends. Welcome to JumbleThink. My name is Michael Woodward. I am your host. We have a really cool episode lined up with Todd Eckler. He is on the team over at Piezo Motion. They're doing some really cool stuff over there. Now, I know right now most of you aren't going to know what they do. They work with micro engines and pumps and how that works in the world of medical and robotics and drones and smart homes and a lot of emerging technology. They are one of the driving forces to reinventing how we use this hardware piece in our software. They're partnering with lots of cool companies doing crazy things. So let's go ahead and join the conversation we had with our guest today, Todd Eckler, and learn more about what Piezo Motion is doing. Todd, welcome to JumbleThink.
Thank you, Michael. Pleasure to be here.
Super excited to be talking to you about what you are doing and what the company is doing, because we're all about innovation and you're taking a really unique approach to do that.
Yeah, so we are playing in the precision motion space, and we've developed the quintessential better mousetrap for the industry. And so we're taking, you know, technology and science that's been around for you know, century or so, but been able to modernize it through some innovative science, some proven applications, and to be able to create a next generation motor that's going to help, you know, drive a lot of the things that we're seeing in the industry today, where we need things to be, you know, smaller, lighter, faster, portable, where the current technologies just runs up against limitations.
Now, a lot of our listeners aren't going to be super familiar with what you do or the company for that matter. Tell us a little bit about, you mentioned engines and tools that you're making smaller and smaller. Talk to us a little bit about the applications of what you're building and how it impacts the world around us.
So we're building the motors that are going inside next generation devices. So, you know, we play a lot in med tech space. So when you look at, for example, wearable or portable drug delivery or portable data capture and information, what we've developed is the ability of being able to deliver very precise, smooth motion with very little power in a small footprint. And what that allows you to do is to be able to put that into a package that somebody could actually attach to their body and give a consistent, high potent dose of a therapeutic drug for them when they need it, or continuous on demand, and to do it without, you know, kind of interrupting their life. So there's a lot of applications for those, and really where we're focused on is that need for quick action, precision, small footprint.
In the world of technology, which is a world that I play in, you hear a lot about the software side of thing. You hear a lot about development and applications and software as a service, and yet there has to be hardware that software mates with. You're on the hardware side of things, right?
Well, yes. I mean, we talk about this from the hardware perspective, but it's all intertwined today. Okay. And so my background comes from decades in software and software as a service, and The luxury that we have on the software side is that you're only constrained by your ideas and processing power. So you have infinite number of precision that you can develop. You have an infinite amount of analysis that can be done rapidly. But if that analysis is supposed to translate into something that's supposed to happen in the physical world, you've then hit a bottleneck in terms of what's the device on the other end of it and to what level of precision that you can go. So it doesn't help you to have an artificial intelligence engine that can predict something that's going to happen in your life if it can't actually control a mechanism to avoid or deal with that situation, right? So okay, great. So your windshield wipers can, you know, turn on when, you know, it senses that it's about to rain, but that's a much different scenario when trying to determine whether you should get, you know, a delivery of a high potent narcotic because you're about to have some sort of medical condition because we're seeing the biofeedback information. Artificial intelligence engine says, oops, something's happening here based on the data I have. So we're developing that precision hardware so that we can actually affect change or take action on the world that's ahead of us on the software side, because they're just not constrained the same way.
Well, I think that's the interesting thing here is that, you know, there's a lot of technology that's being built right now, both in the hardware and software worlds, but a lot of it impacts our lives to make it better. It doesn't just impact our lives like yours does. It does make our lives better, but yours also is about the difference between life and death at times.
Absolutely. Yeah. So when you start thinking about, you know, robotics and precision robotics and looking at surgical robotics, one of the reasons why you want to introduce, you know, robots into the surgical process is because you can make prescriptive movements. Mm-hmm. When those movements have to be determined based on what's happening in real time with the patient, the diagnosis of what's happening, all the information that's happening at the environment at the same time, if you are off by a percentage in what you're telling that motor to do, then yes, it could be life or death or certainly severely debilitating. And this also comes back with the same kind of feedback loop too. So one of the things that we've implemented as part of our strategy within the technology is it isn't just enough to be able to say, okay, well, you know, move this from point A to point B. It's to also, you know, capture the data of, okay, I was asked to move to point A to point B. How close did I get to B? Mm-hmm. And how long did I stay at B, right? Because then this is generating data that's coming back to it. And so you can start to get a profile of how that motor is operating within the environment under the conditions it's act to perform. And then you can start to make, again, the software can start to use that as an analysis to find A, maybe more efficient ways, right? I tell you to go A, B, stay at B, go back to A. Like, well, maybe I don't need to move you back to A because 99% of the time you go to C or something like that, right? So it's being able to get that kind of feedback that wouldn't necessarily be thought about up front, but comes after capturing data when things are happening live in the field.
I want to step back for a moment. We're going to get back into the technical aspect of what you do in a few minutes. But before we do that, I want to step back and hear the origin story of PiezoMotion. How did this company come to be?
So this has been an evolution of the company. We've just rebranded our name to be in line with kind of the market and the science that we're going after. But the history of the company is developing highly precise, very unique motion systems, right? So think about motors that would be used in, you know, in aerospace, where you just need 10 of them, but the requirements are so unique and need to be so performant that you go to the best of the best in the world, which basically represents our team. So we've got, you know, the scientists that literally wrote the book on this. We've got the execution. So we've got the street cred in terms of being able to do it. What happened as, you know, part of the growth of the company is that, you know, where opportunity meets understanding and, you know, taking action on it, there was a project that the team was working on, had some breakthroughs on the science side, and said, look, I think we've got an opportunity to disrupt the marketplace as it is today by being able to bring this level of precision down to mass market where it could actually be used and be affordable to be able to put into, you know, consumer-based types of, you know, applications where that level of capability was only at the very extreme. And so that's kind of where, you know, where we're playing and where the evolution of the company has is that we've produced the, when I described that, you know, the better mousetrap is that we've produced a new precision motor that's using a different set of science and technology, which you're happy to get, you know, get into, that's saying that you can get, you know, 100 times more precise with lower power and a smaller footprint with a better, you know, lifetime, you know, usage. Now, these aren't motors that are used for everything. This isn't about, you know, spinning the fan, you know, that's keeping you cool at night or right. driving your remote control car. This is, you know, motors that are going into, you know, controlling mirrors that are shooting lasers, you know, thousands of miles where moving a micron makes a difference. This is about, you know, driving, you know, a 3D printer that may be printing bio tissue for new organs in the future. So this is the cutting edge set of things that are happening in the world in which they want to bring it to the masses. Humanity would benefit from it, but they're limited by, okay, well, to do this, the options that we had from a motion control could just outprice the ability of being able to deliver it. And that's where we've cracked that nut.
You know, you mentioned a lot of times when innovation in tech happens, you see it happen at such a hyper-focused space. You mentioned there about the different spaces that you had originally started and how this is an evolution of a company. And we hear all the time about, oh, this is something NASA worked on, and now it's kind of in everyday consumer life or used for consumer good at some level. The evolution of the company, you have to have a vision. You have to be able to see what is yet to be. So how are you identifying the spaces in which the technology that you're developing really makes sense to be used in? Maybe it's consumer goods, maybe it's medical equipment, maybe it is, you mentioned those 3D printers doing bio tissues and other really cool things. How are you seeing where your technology makes sense to be?
So the good news is that from doing market research is that the data exists, right? There's companies out there in the field that are trying to make new innovative products and or take existing products and make them smaller, run on batteries for longer life or whatever. They're trying to innovate at, you know, at a rapid pace. And where our vision allows us to is to actually just fit in the middle there and to say, look, that engineering design problem that you have or that motion control problem that you're trying to be able to solve so that you could actually make a commercial product out of it, we've got that ability to be able to fit in there. And so it's always this quandary as you're trying to grow and scale a company. It's like, you know, prevailing wisdom is, you know, pick a single direction, put all of your wood behind that arrow, focus at it, and then the success will come after it. That's great, except when you're playing in an environment where you can see so much success that's happening with little effort to be able to spill over. So what we have is kind of what I would describe as a bullseye kind of approach, where we're throwing a dart at a dartboard where we know there's low-hanging fruit, especially around med tech. As we get into, you know, wearables and we get into drug research and delivery, everything about that, you know, screams, you know, precision and accuracy and consistency is key, right? So those spit out directly to our kind of key value propositions. But as you're going after that individual market, the properties in which you describe and how you solve it, other industries that are kind of those outer rings of the target or the dartboard raise their head up and say, oh, can your product, you know, solve this? And through our, you know, partner networks and the people that focus in those industry verticals, we're able to take the core set of technology, the core platform, and make it applicable there without diluting our overall focus in terms of, you know, where we're going to be able to, you know, to win and grow and scale.
So you talk about the core platform there. You talk about the foundation building blocks of how you take your tech and apply it to different spaces. MedTech is such a wide space, it could be applied to vastly different spaces, massively different technology. How much of the research and development process that you're doing is able to take things that at the core are very much uniform across the different spaces and reutilize that? And how much of it is, this is the core philosophy and now we're applying it to a different tool? So we have to build a different motor. We have to build a different technology, a different pump, a different system that integrates into this tech.
So we approach it like a platform play. And so it's easy for me to describe it because in a software world, you would say, I'm going to architect a platform as a service, and I'm going to build my other software components on it, and there's going to be an integration through an API. Mm-hmm. I see that translated into the world in which we live in as well on the piezo motion side from a hardware side, is that we've built that kind of platform, which is the core science, the core mechanics of creating this motion in this unique, patented way, but we've done it in such a way that it is malleable in terms of how it actually gets applied. So the form factor in which it gets, used in, its specific way in which it, connects to the devices that are there, those are all ways that can be enhanced, modified, or the OEM customer that has an application can take the pieces and parts and work together with us to be able to assemble those. So when we look at it, really from a platform side of things to say, okay, well, what can we do here from an R&D perspective? How can we get more power out of this? How can we get more precision? How can we get more speed? How can we reduce the size, and how can we reduce the energy, consumption? So if we take all of those things into account, and then we can get it into the core components of the motor, then we can build the other things around it in terms of what is its shape, what is its form, how does it actually connect up with the other devices that are around there. And so if you look at our overall kind of platform, you can see that there's 12 platform motors that are there. Those translate into hundreds of SKUs based on all of those variations that, somebody, in the drone space may be, interested versus somebody that's in, that's developing a robot that's going to go in an MRI unit, for example. So the core science is the same, but how it actually gets deployed and used are the components that go around it.
So you're developing these motors, you're developing these engines, you're doing really cool things with them. Where does... You mentioned, a drone company might come in and pull off this part, use it, and something that they're building. Who's responsible for that testing and for that refining? How much are you doing? How much are you partnering with the companies that use your products? It seems like there's a lot of synergy that has to be between both what you're delivering and also what the consumer is then repurposing or retooling or reusing out of the tools that you apply.
Yeah, so the process is typically you've got a set of engineers on the customer side who are trying to solve a problem. So they raise their hand to us and they say, look, this is the problem I'm trying to solve, and it usually gets into technical specifications, and there's a drawing that's shared of how it wants to be able to work. Because we have a kind of a novel approach of how we deal with solving the motion, it's an opportunity for us to educate that, okay, the way that you were thinking about it in terms of using traditional motors, you don't need that gearbox, you don't need that electric brake, you can go with a direct drive mechanism, you can use linear motion instead of rotary motion. So what you would have been constrained with in terms of what have you learned in school, combined with the practicality of other applications that you've worked on, right up front, as you talked about, it's kind of an education process. So we do find ourselves in that kind of design aspect together with them, but it's from an educational perspective because there's the other benefit of this is that although we talk about this from being highly scientific, the interface to it is very simple. The motor itself is very simple, seven parts to it. So that design allows the engineers to be able to wrap their heads around it very quickly and start to collaborate. Where another third party may come involved is when they start to get into, okay, well, we're going to go from a prototype stage, we need to do short run production, we need to get FDA clearance. So there are multiple different parties to come in, but a lot of that aha moment comes up front when we're going through that kind of education phase.
We're going to take a break right here, and in a moment we'll be back to continue the conversation with today's guest, Todd Eckler. I have a simple question for you. Have we ever connected up? If not, and you're a listener, I would love to connect with you. I would love to hear your stories, how you're chasing your dreams. I'd love to connect with you on your favorite social media channel. I would love to start the conversation. So wherever you are, whether it's on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, or Twitter, drop me a note. I would love to hear from you. Or you can even email me, hello@jumblethink.com, and let's start the conversation. I'd love to hear what you're dreaming about. I'd love to hear what your plans are for the summer and all the exciting adventures you're on. I would love to hear from you. So let's connect and let's start the conversation. Now let's return to today's conversation. It sounds like part of the issue here is awareness of what's possible, right, and that there are going to be a lot of businesses that go, we wish we could do X, Y, and Z, or we have a concept to do X, Y, and Z, but until they're aware of a company like yours or your company, they really don't have the concept of what is really attainable. It's almost like, here's a dream for the future. We're looking at a Jetsons moment, and we're looking and seeing what could be, but how do we get there? So how are you bringing awareness to what you're doing? And beyond the awareness, then how are you unlocking the imagination of these companies that you partner with to say, hey, dream bigger. Hey, look at this and see what's possible and go outside of what you would think is your normal limitations with what you do and how you approach it.
So it's very much a grassroots effort. So we're working with, you know, a community of, you know, highly intelligent individuals that are tinkerers by trade, right? So what you see them do in the office, and I'm pretty sure you go and look at home, and they've got, you know, 7 soldering irons sitting at the kitchen table, and, you know, they're you know, finding out unique ways of, you know, doing things at home. And so what we're trying to tap into is that, you know, that dreamer mentality that sits in most of the engineers and product designers that are out there, to be able to challenge them on ideas and how to be able to solve it. The good thing is that, you know, this isn't so foreign to them that they would not trust its ability to, you know, to deliver. It's a kind of, aha, you've solved that piece, which was always that roadblock for me to be able to move forward. And then the next piece that kind of comes along with it is kind of, you know, success breeds success. So when you start to see other companies that have solved that kind of application challenge and be able to, you know, to promote it. One of, you know, being from the you know, kind of the marketing side here, one of the challenges that I have is that, as you can imagine, a lot of the clients that we're talking to do not want to talk about what they're doing, right? So it's very exciting for us to go, oh, that's really cool. Here, we can help you. Yes, but we can't tell any of the world about kind of what you're, you know, what you're up to doing, so other people can kind of take benefit of it. So it's that kind of, and that's why I say it's that level of abstraction and really just kind of educating on what is possible and giving kind of the ideation to spur that on. And we know up front that this is, you know, that we've structured the company and our philosophy amongst the management team that this isn't just, you know, okay, we've created, you know, a widget, and this widget can do these things, and here's how you can buy it or order it. This is a solutions-based company that just happens to get its revenue from, you know, mass selling of OEM products.
Really interesting to think about trying to apply a product to hypotheticals and selling a product or connecting with a partner on how they can do something that they can't even share. I can't imagine how difficult that is to then navigate the complexities of solving problems.
Yeah. So there's a lot of prototypical things that happen, right? So we work with companies that even when discussing the problem with us, it's obfuscated from what they're actually trying to do. Mm. So they'll ask to build a prototype that isn't actually what they're trying to build. They're just trying to solve some sort of motion problem, which will end up going into the other system that they're ultimately building. So a lot of what we're doing is trying to be able to communicate that through, you know, mechanisms that would make sense for them to be able to understand in terms of animations and videos and being able to just get that education piece down. But going back to my grassroots efforts, it's a lot about just kind of, you know, changing hearts and minds one by one, right? The other good thing about the market in which we work in is that this is a tight-knit community, right? They like to when somebody learns, you know, something, they're very quick to say, hey, have you seen this, you know, such and such? And so we, you know, you get that kind of, you know, social multiplier, even in a world where you're having to deal with, you know, one step removed or hypothetical, you know, situation.
Innovation's often expensive because there's a lot of that research and development. And you mentioned early on that you were doing things as a business that were hyper-focused to a specific industry, to a specific problem, to a specific issue that you were facing. How are you bringing affordability and making this more accessible to problems that maybe don't have the budget to do that, or that there's just going to be such a scale at this that you have to make it more affordable and approachable to actually use this tech?
So that is the secret sauce of kind of what we've put together here. There's always been the blocker in being able to leverage any, you know, kind of piezo-based motion technology is the cost, the infrastructure, and the way that it was designed. So we know that we are only going to be successful based on being able to cross that cost barrier. And at this point, we've cracked that nut to be able to provide a superior product at a price point that is better or equivalent to what they would see in the market today. But at the same time, this is just the start of the innovation. So, you know, one of the fun things and challenging teams are working with, you know, a bright engineering team is that, you know, from a commercial side, I'm trying to, you know, I'm talking about what we're doing with clients today, and they're talking about what they're doing and planning for delivering to me, you know, 3, 5, you know, 10 years down the road. And so all of those, that, you know, continued investment and leveraging on just kind of that first step out the door is about being able to bring this down to, you know, to smaller, lighter, faster, cheaper type of architecture.
Now, right now, you're serving robotics, you're serving med tech, you're serving drones, smart home technologies. There's a lot of technologies that come into this, but the space is evolving so quickly. How are you staying on the pulse of what's happening?
So two things. One is that part of the team that is doing the R&D side is well connected at the academic level. So they're not only are they, you know, an expert in their field and publishing and educating on the science in which we leverage as part of this, we get the benefit of being, you know, close to other research facilities in which other commercial companies are, you know, partnering together with, you know, universities to do cutting edge things. So that certainly keeps us available or accessible to kind of the heartbeat of what's happening on that side. In addition, we really focus on being able to understand the trends that are coming in, you know, in the market. And that comes through the, you know, the network of connections and partners and connectivity amongst the teams that you work with. So whether it's from partners or shareholders or customers themselves, building that network of communication and being able to always challenge what you believe is the status quo helps to drive kind of where your decisions are going to be made. And, you know, kind of unlike, you know, talking to a customer about a software feature where, you know, they can say, you know, it would be really, really nice if this button was moved over here and save this click. And, you know, 3 days later, it can be rolled out and, you know, delivered to them.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more complicated on trying to, you know, affect that change through, you know, something that's going to ultimately end into a, you know, highly controlled, certified, regulated product.
A lot of what you're building is micro in scale when it comes to the actual device size. But the innovation's pretty large. So you're having to address both large-scale innovation and awareness and bringing products to the market that reinvent how we approach specific problems. But you're also micro-innovating and tuning. You mentioned that there are 12 or 7 parts of a lot of these motors. So how are you tuning at the micro level while both balancing the macro evolution of technology through using your products in the industry?
It really comes back to solid product management and really adhering to the the philosophy and the rigor that comes with how do you do product innovation, how do you roll out those changes, how do you be able to understand what the impact is going to be. And, you know, our organization is no different than others, you know, at our size and stage and opportunity. You're always weighing one investment over its cost and its opportunity cost, and being able to balance those things out and having that rigor, that process. And also, frankly, having a team that's kind of been there, done that, allows that decision-making process to be efficient and done with confidence, so that we can kind of see the reward as it starts to happen, you know, weeks, months, and, you know, years into the process.
You guys are solving some really unique problems. You're giving tools that make a world of difference in so many different spaces. We have a lot of listeners to our show who are startup founders. They're early innovators. They're rethinking and reshaping our approach to many of the ways we approach, whether it's business or entrepreneurship or education. We talk to a lot of different people, and I always want to bring it back to them and make sure they're getting some takeaways they can apply to their lives today. As a company that innovates at such a high level in spaces that are going to radically shape our world, what are tips that you would give them to approach innovation, to approach rapid change in spaces that really matter?
So I think it comes down to creating the structure to be able to evaluate the changes that are happening. And whatever you're seeing today and the speed that it's happening, just know that it's going to come at you at an exponential growth and speed. And so if you don't focus on the fundamentals from an operation standpoint to manage the business that you have at hand, at the same time of being able to create the rigor of how you make decisions to plan for the future, you'll find yourself, you know, looking in the rear of your mirror and wondering how you got to this piece and why somebody else who had the same knowledge that you did at the time took that opportunity. I think there's also, you know, an important aspect here, and I've seen this through my career in companies, is that if you were an early, you know, kind of forging ahead and cutting a new industry, that you're always, you know, you're seen as this leader and you're innovating fast and you're moving forward and things, you know, things are going at a cycle. There are other companies that step into that space designed to be able to disrupt what you've done. They don't enter it in the beginning because that's part of their business model and how they get into it. And to be able to say that, okay, well, I've got, you know, 3 years of innovation ahead of other companies that are coming into this, isn't a fair measuring stick to be able to use based on the fact that you've already solved challenges that they are the beneficiary of.
Yeah.
And so whether it's, you know, new team, new dollars, that creates a situation where you can be too comfortable in the position that you have, because that can also evaporate very quickly. And so getting back to looking at the decision-making process that you had in the early days to be able to make those innovative decisions, why not apply those same rules to where you had today, as if you were starting, you know, from scratch and reinventing? What would you do if you didn't have to worry about kind of the legacy engine that you've already started with?
So it sounds like what you're saying there is that when you're inventing or innovating or creating in spaces, you can't get comfortable just because you have been down the road a little bit further than others. Others can come in quickly and radically reshape the space that you built. So you have to stay nimble, you have to stay aware, and you have to take the same approach that you built your business to continue the success of the business.
Correct, yeah. And it's easy to say, it's very hard to do, because yeah, you now have an operating company, you've got customers that have new demands on you, you've got new ideas and new opportunities in front of you. And so it is something that has to be from the top and has to be prescriptive to be able to stay on top of it.
There are going to be people listening that may be thinking, what Todd and Piezo Motion are doing sound like something that might work for a project I'm working on. What are the best ways for them to find and connect with you and the business?
So there's a wealth of knowledge on our website about the products and kind of where they play and what they're capable of being able to do. There's, you know, support material up there. So that is likely the first source of information. And then, you know, we have a team here that's designed to be able to, you know, just brainstorm ideas with, you know, companies. So just reaching out to, you know, to me or to, you know, any of the, you know, contact forms that are on the website. It's, you know, one step away from getting to talk to a knowledgeable, you know, engineer or design consultant that can help you, brainstorm your design or motion challenges.
We're going to put the links in the episode notes, so it's going to be easy for you as you listen to just click on those and begin the process of exploring. There's nothing wrong with listening to the conversation and looking through the website and see what's going on at the same time. So go check that out as you listen to today's conversation. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we continue the conversation with Todd Eckler from Piezo Motion. Whether in business or your personal life, innovation can be a powerful tool to help you unlock the future of your dreams. That's why we created the Dreamer's Guide to Micro Experiments. Micro experiments are quick ways that you can try, learn, and grow your dreams. Best of all, this guide is completely free. All you have to do is head on over to jumblethink.com, and you'll find a link at the bottom of the page, a little pop-up, to say, do you want to download that free guide now? So go download that guide and start the process of using micro experiments to rapidly grow your dreams and ideas. Now let's continue today's conversation. We are back with Todd Eckler. All right, Todd, I want to unpack this just a little bit further. There are a lot of people that are saying, this sounds really cool, but I'm not sure I completely understand it or the piezo, what that means. Can you unpack that and the technology a little bit further for us?
Sure. So the first is that, you know, most everybody has had an opportunity to work with a piezo crystal. So if you have a gas grill and you've ever pushed that red button and you've heard the pop and a spark happens, you've used piezo technology. What's happening in that situation is that when you push that button, inside of that canister is a little tiny crystal, and you are compressing it. And by compressing it, it's generating energy. That energy is then what creates the spark. So, well, how does that work from what we do with emotion? The interesting thing is that you can actually do the reverse process, and that's in fact what it's called, the reverse piezo effect. And so in this case, what's happening is that when you supply energy to the crystal in appropriate form, you can actually get the crystal to change shape. So what we talked about with the gas grill is changing the shape of the crystal to generate energy. The reverse process is to put energy into the crystal and get it to change shape. And so that's what we do. So when we apply energy to the crystal, we can actually get a small piece of that to make a motion. And we make very simple motion, up, over, down. And by doing that, you can kind of visualize that if you had, you know, your little point that's sticking up and it's pushing against a rod or a board, when you push against it, you've made contact, you move, which the friction will push whatever you're touching over, and then when you come back down, you just repeat that process, you know, at a high speed. The cool thing about what we're able to do in this situation is much different than what we would have, you know, you would have learned in, you know, eighth grade science and wrapping coils around, you know, a nail and attaching it to a battery and creating a magnet to create motion, right? This is much different technology, and it affords some huge benefits. One is the when you want to stop an electric motor and have it hold its place, you're keeping energy there. You've got to keep it, you know, not moving by applying energy to it, or you have to have another component which acts as a brake. Mm-hmm. In our environment, when you take power away from it, that crystal, if it's touching the piece that's moving, that friction will keep that piece from moving. So zero energy kind of holding power. And so that's a big benefit. The other thing is that precision. So in what we had referred to as kind of the traditional precision DC motors, in round numbers, if you had a dial that's turning, a rotary motor, you would be able to make about 30,000 steps in a traditional motor.
Wow.
And so while that may sound like a lot, it doesn't actually get you to a level of precision and fluidity that the industry needs. In our rotary motor, we take that 30,000 and it goes up to 660,000. It goes up so precise and so small that if you actually were to run the motor at slow speed, you wouldn't see any movement visually. You'd have to look at it underneath a microscope. Wow. And so now when you have that level of control, you can start thinking about doing, incisions and operations at, smaller than a human hair. You can talk about, moving a droplet of fluid that is, as small as the tip of a needle and doing it consistently. That's what this science and technology brings to the market.
You know, for me, where I always think of piezo is guitar pickups.
Sure.
Is that the same kind of technology? Is it just applied to a motor type technology instead of a transducer of some sort?
Exactly. Yeah. So piezos are used in lots of different places. So you'll see them in, in cell phones and speakers and guitar pickups. Exactly. So it's that same, principle that's being applied. And that's why I said the science has been around forever, but the application and the secret sauce of being able to, how to actually control and manipulate it, the science and the algorithms to get it to do what you want when you want it to do it, is what we've been able to package and put together.
I think a lot of people, we always hear about the microchips and computers, and we always hear about different parts of the mechanics, but this is a piece that seems to be a little bit more obscure in kind of the common dictionary of people, realizing that it's being used in so many different facets of life.
Yeah, it's not something that we talk about, right? And, nobody, goes to the guitar store and say, so, what version or what, what manufacturer of the piezo crystal are you using, as part of that pickup? It's just, it's a level beneath that, right?
Yeah.
And so you've hit, another, challenge as we talk about how do we evangelize this and talk about what we're doing is that, the vernacular isn't commonplace and how you talk about it and what's being used, you've really got to kind of go back to square one and say, even for individuals that are in the know and were taught about this in their physics class or in electrical engineering or wherever they're getting introduced to it, it's really kind of resetting that.
So we've talked a little bit about this technology. You mentioned medical. You mentioned that there's industrial use. There's avionics usage of this. So what are the spaces that you feel like are underutilizing this technology, that there's the future of opportunity there?
I see a big piece in wearables. So a lot of what we're talking about today from wearables is about data collection, mm-hmm. but there are things that we do that would be nice for us to be able to have motion to. So, you could envision that the glasses that you're wearing, are adjusting themselves to certain situations. They may be, prescription or therapeutic lenses that are helping, individuals that have specific, eyesight ailments that can be adjusted, but, those are normally stationary types of things, but if we can provide motion to it. And the challenge with being able to provide motion to that is that there's environmental variables. You're moving your head, things are tilting around. But if you can work at speed and precision, like we have devices now that know that you've tilted left 13 degrees at this acceleration speed, you can create reverse motion profiles that will adjust for that. So obviously I'm talking highly, theoretical, but there's a huge opportunity, a huge investment on the wearable side that we can now be able to create things that can actually create motion that aren't just kind of gross motion, but actually precision motion that will either help us from a quality of life, lifestyle type of thing, or be augmenting us in terms of, human assisted robotic activities. So where there's an individual involved, but there's a device in which they're, is attached to them that they're operating, the motion that's actually created is done by both the human and the software, and being able to actually execute that, you know, in a specific situation. So the cool and exciting thing about this is that there are so many areas of opportunities in which this is going to have an impact. And that's, you know, kind of why at the top of the discussion, I phrased this as this is disruptive, right? So my hope is that as we do things, these discussions, and people start to go through that, when we look back a couple of years ago, it's like, oh yeah, of course I'm using, you know, a piezo motor and that's what it's designed to do.
Wow. I had no idea how far this technology was being used. And beyond that, you know, I didn't have a full understanding what a piezo motor was or how it was used in motion. I just find that really fascinating.
And your reaction is very similar to when I have those conversations with a lot of people, is to say that A was not something I, you know, knew I needed to think about, but now that I've thought about it, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely really cool. I'm excited to watch what happens with this, with your company and with where you take this. It seems like it's really truly an endless journey of possibility. A little Willy Wonka in the electronic space.
I like that. Yeah. So we need the Wonka Vader elevator to take us to the next level.
I love it. I love it.
We're going to take a break right here. And when we return, it is rapid fire questions. We have a really cool conversation lined up for you in our next episode of Jumble Think. Our guest is NQ. He has an Amazon Prime special called NQ Live at the Ace Theater. He is a poet, a multi-platinum award-winning songwriter, and an author of a new book called Inquire Within. You're not going to want to miss this conversation, so make sure to subscribe to the show and check out our next conversation with our guest, NQ. Now let's jump into rapid fire questions.
Levez seulement le bras pour mettre l'aiguille sur le disque. Mettez le contact, reposez votre bras et attendez. Restez calme pendant.
Well, let's take some minutes as we wrap up today's conversation to dive into some rapid fire questions.
Okay, sounds good.
As a child, what did you want to be when you grew up?
I was going to drive a train. That's what my grandfather did. That's what my father did. And that's what I was going to do. And I actually wouldn't get away with doing that today, but actually had the opportunity in the summers to sit and drive a train with my dad.
Super cool. If somebody has a big idea and dream and they don't know where to start, where should they start?
The first place to start is by collecting your thoughts and just looking within your own resources. Yeah. The biggest thing that I think that distracts people when you have a dream and a vision is to either quickly try to get validation for it, or to try to find information on the web or whatever that reinforces, you know, your idea. But if you're truly dreaming and you truly have a big idea, what you're going to find are the things that are actually going to work against you. So it's important that you actually get, you self-challenge before you start to reach out to other resources.
What's one book you think every dreamer or idea maker should read?
Well, I'm into the psychology aspects of it, the human nature. So I like things like Blink, for example. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole human aspect to things that we don't understand. So as much as I'm, you know, talking about the science of software and piezo motors, at the end of the day, these are all, you know, all this energy is going to do something for, you know, for humans. And how do the humans actually interact with that? And it isn't exactly as we would perceive it to be.
Yeah. What is one trend you're currently excited about?
Anything that's autonomous. So that trifecta of being able to capture so much data, the ability to apply, you know, true intelligence and predictive analysis on that data, that can affect a set of change to make my life better, to do things before for me before I even knew that they needed to be done.
For you, how do you personally define success?
So that comes from a couple of different aspects. Success, I have a builder mentality.
Okay.
So it comes from being able to see the process go from ideation to other people and organization getting benefit from what I or we have built. If you can complete that loop, then the other things that may be yardsticks for success, money, fame, fortune, vacation, all those other things, either A, don't become as relevant as you thought that they were in the beginning, or B, become a byproduct of you doing that activity.
What's one thing you wish you would have known when you first started out?
That I didn't know it all.
I think that's a lesson all of us can learn.
So there's something to be said for, you know, being naive and wide-eyed and going to conquer the world. There's another thing to be said that sometimes you want to take the counsel and advice of elders that have those scars that you will likely get and benefit from in the future.
In our final rapid fire question, what is one dream you are still wanting to fulfill in your own life?
the balance of being able to make more time. There are so many things that I know that I want to be able to do, and it's always balanced by the fact that there's, you know, a finite amount of time, and I haven't been able to solve that application yet.
Todd, thank you so much for joining us today. What a fascinating company. What a really unique approach to problem solving. It's just been an honor to have you on the show. So thanks for joining us today.
I really appreciate it, and thank you for the time.
Once again, I want to thank Todd from Piezo Motion for joining us here on JumbleThink. What an honor to have him on to talk about this innovative company doing really cool things. Whether you think they're going to be a great partner or are just fascinated about technology and innovation, I would recommend go check out their website and what they're doing. Those links are in the episode notes. Once again, I want to remind you, our guest on the next show is NQ. It's going to be a really, really cool conversation. You're not going to want to miss that. And I want to thank you for tuning into today's show. I hope today's conversation has sparked something inside of you, has challenged you, has made you rethink what is possible. Only a few years ago, what Todd and their team is doing would have been impossible, and yet here they are creating it. So what are those impossible things in your life? What are the things that you're saying, well, there's just no way it's going to happen? Maybe it's time to rethink them. Maybe it's time to say, what if the impossible is possible? But it only happens if you take a risk. So my challenge to you today is simple. Step back, reflect. What is impossible in your life, but the dream that's burning inside of you? And then let's see what you can do to make it possible. It's your turn. You've got to get out there. Dream big. And change the world around you.
Les mères de famille, les enfants peuvent également prendre un moment revitalisant dans quelques mois, lorsque vous aurez bien saisi la technique et que vous serez maître de votre corps, vous pourrez vous décontracter même en travaillant.